Hi there, and welcome to Untold Developer Stories, where we talk to popular developers and get the scoop on stories you didn't know. I'm Agathe Badia, junior developer and podcast host at Honeypot for Untold Developer Stories.
And I'm Hannah Auger. I'm a writer and content person. And we are here with Cassidy Williams, who is technically a principal developer experience engineer at Netlify, but I think that she is a lot more than that. Yeah, I can just start listing off some of the things that she does. She plays the trumpet, but not right now because she's injured, but she plays the trumpet. She knows a lot about mechanical keyboards. She had a Kickstarter for a Go game, and she's all over TikTok. And I'm going to ask her to tell me all of the things that I've missed. Like, how would you define yourself?
Oh, man. Well, you kind of covered most of it. I basically like making memes and building stuff. And that's the high-level summary. I work at Netlify as my day job. And then outside of it, I like making TikToks, making music, making keyboards, and playing games.
One thing that I really, really like that you also... I think really, really enjoy doing and from your, the path that you have is also around dev education. And earlier when we talked together, you were also mentioning learning by teaching approach. How did you get into this kind of learning approach and how do you work through that yourself?
That's a good question because it's something that I've always enjoyed. I've always enjoyed showing people how to do things. It's just a fun thing to me. But then I think it was just in college as I was doing like TA work and peer mentorship and stuff. I started just helping younger students with their code and I really enjoyed that. And that led me into going into developer advocacy. And my first role out of college was kind of a hybrid engineering role and developer advocacy role. And I've kind of been doing that ever since. And sometimes I'll go more towards the engineering side, and then sometimes I'll go full-time towards the advocacy or teaching side. And now I'm kind of in one of those hybrid roles again, but on the more advocacy side again. And it's something that I just genuinely enjoy because I like seeing people get excited about learning something. Whenever people have that aha moment where you show them how to work on something and it just clicks in their brain, they're like, oh, I could do this. I love seeing that and I love getting people to that point.
What are some of the things that you've helped people, make and achieve that you're super proud of?
Ooh. A lot of times it's just kind of small code things. And so it'll be just like, oh, I started a React app or I figured this and that out. But what's been particularly fun is sometimes I'll teach kids at like community centers and stuff. And they're often just like young, not sure what they're doing. They're just kind of doing what they're told because their parents signed up for a class or something for them. But, it's very cool to see when people are able to take what they learn and get creative with it. And I think kids are the perfect example of that because they learn the thing and they're like, oh, okay. Then, and they just run with it. And I remember there was this one 6-year-old girl that I taught and she was the youngest one in this group. It was kind of a wide age range from high school all the way down to her. And this little 6-year-old, I showed her how to make images in HTML. And I was just like, okay, here's how you do this. Yeah. It was very, very fun. And she was kind of just quiet and typing away for like a solid hour. And I was kind of just letting her go while answering other kids' questions. And I come back and she made Unicorn Instagram or Unicornstagram, I think she called it. And it was just a bunch of pictures of Instagram or of unicorns with little descriptions under all of them. And it was adorable. But just my heart soared. And she just was having a ball explaining all the different unicorns and how she made all of the images the right size. And it just warmed my heart. And honestly, it was very impressive for a 6-year-old girl. But she totally just took it and run with it. And little things like that just totally keep me going.
This is so cute. And I want to say so genius coming from someone so young. I love that.
I know, right? We got to get her on a team.
Yeah, I would be on Instagram.
I also wondered, because as you said, you went through developer advocacy and also having very hybrid roles. Today, you are a principal developer experience at Netlify. And you said, so it's also a very special role. I'm not super sure what it is. What is this role?
Yeah, and so I can actually send y'all a link that explains it really well because we wrote a blog post about it. But it's a department that I remember when I joined it, I was like, this was a department created for dev advocates who know what they're doing by dev advocates who know what they're doing. And it was really, really exciting because a lot of times you see dev advocacy types under marketing or under engineering. And it makes sense because they do kind of overlap on both of those. But what was interesting at Netlify in particular is we had our own organization for it that's like its own pillar separate from engineering and marketing. And as a result, our goals were able to line up to the types of tasks that we do rather than under marketing goals or other under engineering goals. Because under the product engineering goals, for example, that's lines of code that we've written and products shipped and things like that. And so it like kind of works because we do write code, but not so much. And under marketing, it's like leads that we can get so that way we can get enterprise customers and stuff. And we don't really touch on that either. And so we focus much more on like top of funnel, getting developers interested, getting developers engaged and that sort of thing. And what's interesting about this too is with dev advocacy, again, it's a lot of content creation, creating resources and stuff for developers to show them how to use the platform best and everything. But we also have an element of user experience as well. And we work a lot with our user experience research team. And so sometimes we'll say, hey, we need to figure out if developers might like this particular tool. And the user experience team will interview users and figure out, okay, what would be the best way to go about it. We'll help prototype something and then give it to the rest of the company to run with it. And a really good example of this actually is yesterday at Netlify, we did a big release for deploy preview commenting. It basically, if you launch a deploy preview where you can share it with your team, people can now like take screenshots, circle things, annotate and say like the website should change this way and it'll all live in one space. And that started with the user experience team doing the research, saying it might be good, us helping build a prototype for it to make sure it might be good and do more research on it. And then it just kind of went from there. And so that's kind of how it's gone, where there's a lot of overlap there and then just a lot of teaching and content building. And it's been a really, really cool team to be a part of and role to be a part of.
And what I see a lot from what you're sharing in general, you are very an enabler, a person that enable future developer, unicorn genius, but also people at work. And I wonder as well, do you think your celebrity came out of you sharing and enabling people by sharing online as well? How do you think everything started, for instance, from Twitter with this awesome account that we have here?
It was the memes. I'd love to say that it was the great like, technical content that helped people. It was the memes. I've been like trying to make resources for people for as long as I can remember, honestly, trying to help people to do things. And I admit I didn't have the biggest Twitter following and it was decent, like 10,000 followers, 15,000. I can't complain. And I was making my weekly newsletter for it, trying to make videos for it, streaming for it. And it was just stuff that I was doing and I was happy doing it. And then it was summer of 2019 when I discovered TikTok. Honestly, I just wanted to make a video making fun of something, like the 10x developer where people are just like, oh, you need those. And so I couldn't figure out a good phone video editor. And I was just like, you know, I've heard some people use this TikTok app. Let me try it. And the video editor on it is amazing. Like I think like the memes and stuff on it are fun, but it's basically like giving the teens Adobe Premiere on your phone. It's really, really powerful. And so it was so easy to use where I was just like, oh, I could make videos. This could be great. And so I started making just this one 10x developer video and it kind of exploded relative to my followers at the time. I was just like, oh, dang, people like this kind of stuff. Well, that's fun. And I didn't think anything of it. I kind of figured that would be the only video I posted for a while. And then I was just scrolling around on TikTok one day saying this is funny. And I was like, you know, this song could be good for a developer joke. Maybe I'll do another one. And that one, I'm not exaggerating. I think I went from close to 20,000 followers to over 60,000 in about 2 weeks. And wow. It was just a very sudden influx of humans that I wasn't expecting. And it kind of just went from there, where I was mostly just making them for fun, not being just like, let me try to game the social media system. And the people followed.
They came for the memes. They stayed for the memes.
Yeah.
It makes complete sense to me, though. Like, you can't game the system, really, like you said. And it seems like this is you. Like, when you go on TikTok, it's you. You're just having fun. And it's hilarious. We were actually sharing some of the TikToks just before we started to, like, get ready. Looking at your Halloween scare that I'm not going to give away. So watch the scary Halloween one.
It's really, really fun. Like, I won't lie. I really enjoy making these videos and just doing weird little twists on inside jokes and trying to hide funny little code snippets and stuff whenever I make them and everything. And it's truly something that I still kind of just do for fun. Some videos totally flop, but I had a good time doing them. So that's what matters.
Can you tell us one that was the floppiest?
There was one that this was totally, like, I thought it was hilarious, but it's very specific to people who like the musical Dreamgirls and know it relatively well and know React. And unfortunately, that Venn diagram is not that big. I love Dreamgirls. It's in, like, my top five favorite movies and one of my favorite musicals and stuff. And there's a song in it. Okay, we're going to get deep into it. There's a song in it that's called I Am Changing. And so, like, the intro is Jennifer Hudson going, look at me, I am changing. And so she sings that. And there's also a function in React called Use Effect. And in that function, it kind of watches for changes and then runs when there is a change. And so the caption was, Use Effect, more like Use Effie, because the character Effie is saying, look at me, I'm changing. And then the function is called Use Effect, and you have to look at it because things are changing. It's the perfect joke. I still am so proud of it.
It's very complex. It's like...
Yeah, like if you get it, if anybody is a React user and a Dreamgirls fan, it's a great pun that I am so proud of. But that is, again, a very small group of people. But I was still proud of it. You should be.
There are a handful of people that is their favorite joke, probably.
Oh, yeah. No, I got some DMs where they're just like, you know, this is the most specific joke I've ever heard, but I love it. And I was just like, you are who I did this for.
Aww.
Very proud of that one.
Cute. Talking about musical, you are quite as well experienced with, how do I introduce that? With of course, playing instruments as a very wide range, I would say, but also you've been doing some pretty impressive hobbies related to playing the trumpet, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I would call my playing impressive. I just mostly make up for my lack of ability with enthusiasm. Mm. But I play trumpet, and I have since I was 10. I've got my trumpet over here and I do a little lick, but I can't grip it right now. For those watching, I ran into a door. It was a very dumb mistake. And it was, anyway.
I'm and now client. The trumpet and the rest of us suffer.
Yeah, exactly. You poor things. But anyway, I like to play the trumpet. I play classical guitar. I play euphonium. I like to play a bunch of different things and with varying degrees of ability. We've got like a melodica and a ukulele and a bass and all kinds of stuff. Pre-pandemic, my husband and I, we were in the Seattle Video Game Orchestra. And so we lived in Seattle and we would just play video game music around Seattle. And so we would do like Zelda music and Skyrim music and stuff. And It was a blast. We had such a great time doing it. And he, before going into tech, he's a nerd over at Microsoft. He majored in piano performance as well. And so he knows what he's doing and also plays violin. And so between the two of us, we have way too many instruments, but it's a blast. And we have such a good time, and we try to play together as much as we can. And in addition to the video game orchestra, he was in like the Amazon orchestra. They have one if you work at Amazon. And so he was in the employee orchestra. I know, they're such a big company. So he was in that one. And then I was in, it was a very, like, Seattle's very hipster, and it was a very, very hipster group. I was in an electric guitar band, where it's all electric guitars, no drums or any other instruments, just electric guitars. Oh. It was a fascinating group, and I really enjoyed meeting the people in it. And it was basically sounded like electric guitars in outer space because of all the echo and stuff. But it was a great group to be a part of. Ooh. And so those were the groups that I was in pre-pandemic. And I admit I've been a little bit out of practice since being locked in, mostly too because we're living in an apartment and I don't want to play trumpet and annoy neighbors. Hopefully we can get back into stuff like that when we're out of all this.
I love that. This is like the perfect mix of music, video game, but then you're in an orchestra. I mean, this is dream. Have you ever thought about actually having a duo with your husband and just go on a tour? Because why not?
I don't know about a tour. We have thought about it. And so for a bit more context, we moved to Chicago in the pandemic. And so we're living in this apartment, and we're renovating an older house right now. And we're going to have space for our instruments for once. And it's going to be amazing. Because really before we kind of just had all of our stuff in a corner, would pull them out and play them or pull them out so we could go to practice and stuff. But the fact that we're going to actually have space for it, we're trying to think like, could we do a piano trumpet duet or some kind of collab? But we'll see what that looks like after we move.
This is awesome. I also have another question, which is also audio related. There was a video you made on Twitter with a very awesome ASMR that had a lot of following after. Do we have an upcoming ASMR channel from Cassidy Williams?
No. You know, a lot of people have said, oh, you should get into ASMR. You've got a lot of keyboards and stuff. But, like, I don't think – I feel like it – I don't know if I don't even know how to approach this. Probably not.
ASMR girl. You just like,
just hello. Keyboards are cool.
Oh my gosh, that's the perfect crossover.
Yeah, and then do some clacky noises. I don't really know enough about the world of ASMR. Like I kind of looked up some, and I was just like, oh, I could do something fun with that, and made a video for it, and then. Yeah, there have been multiple people being just like, yeah, you should just do this. And I was kind of like, this was just a meme. I don't know enough about this and like what people want. My microphone is okay. It's all right. I'll just stick with the meme version.
This was extremely, I mean, I must say, like, this was a very, very great and funny video at the same time. So that's probably why it was so successful, but
thank
totally
you.
Understand.
I am you. Yes, I got. Yes,
are you afraid?
Okay, I was gonna say I'm really surprised and just so amazed when you say all these different things that you do, because everyone I know, myself included, you know, it's a little hard to get yourself to actually stick to these hobbies and to actually make something of them. And you know, maybe I have an instrument that I play that I like, but I don't necessarily do it enough to be in an orchestra or to do things with it or to start a Kickstarter. So how do you actually manage to do all of this stuff on top of like your regular work?
I think that's a great question, and I can get very deeply philosophical. I'll try to keep it light philosophical. I think, you know, when we're in school and stuff, and when we're growing up, we're encouraged to do all these extracurriculars, like play sports, play music, draw, do all of these different things. But then it's like once you hit college or once you hit the real world, you're kind of expected to stop and do your job. And if you're going to do something, it should be profitable. and that's just kind of it. And I hate that. And a lot of times, like, for example, I'm not the best trumpet player. I openly admit it. I really love it. I just don't, I kind of just fiddle around and make it work. When I was living in New York City, I tried to join an orchestra just to kind of keep up my skills, because I loved playing it in college. I was in, like, the hockey pep band and stuff. I really enjoyed playing, but in New York, it was kind of all work all the time. And then if you wanted to join even a community orchestra, they had such an intense audition process. You couldn't just be an amateur at it and stuff and just kind of be there to have a good time and meet people. And I really struggled with that because I enjoy playing so much, but I couldn't really play with people without finding people who are just like, yeah, I'm trying to be a musician. And when I moved to Seattle, that's where I found all of these community bands. Like the Seattle Video Game Orchestra, they required no audition. You could just join and play with a bunch of nerds. And there was what was great about it is no one was fighting for first chair, because everyone was just like, I'm realistic. I know that I'm third chair material or second chair material. And the people who did practice hardcore and make time to be really, really awesome, they're the ones who did it. And good for them. And I kind of loved that attitude about it. And it's kind of the same with the electric guitar band I was in. It was just like, okay, how well can you keep rhythm? If you can't, you're going to be in this group. If you're really good at it, I'd like you to play this part. And that's just kind of how it went. And that's just an example of all of these different things. People expect you to draw and then post it all over Instagram to gain a following for your budding art career. I like to draw, but I don't show anybody anything that I do because it's just for me. And I think as adults, we kind of have to try to make time for those things where it's just for you, where you do it just for fun, not because you want to be the best at it, because you want to make a career out of it someday. You just have a hobby and you just do it. And I think thinking of it that way is the reason why I've been able to keep up with it, because I don't do it because I feel stressed, like I have to get good at this. I have to practice it to be better. I do it because I enjoy it. And when you enjoy something and that's purely the end goal to just have fun with it, I think you make time for it a little bit more. And that's why a lot of people end up playing video games and stuff and everything, because they're just doing it to have fun. They're not trying to be a professional esports player. They're just having fun with games. And I think that should be done more with all of these hobbies and extracurriculars and things that we might have done when we were young, but we kind of dropped because culture told us to.
Mm-hmm. I feel a little bit called out.
I'm sorry. No, that wasn't the intention.
No, I know. It just, as you're talking, I was like, oh, crap.
It's very real, though. Mm-hmm. Like, even my sister just got engaged, hey? And my future brother-in-law, he started joining just these community soccer teams and stuff. And he plays regularly and stuff. And at first, he kind of approached it like, I just kind of want to have fun playing soccer like I did in school. Mm-hmm. And now that's that's just what he does. He joined this team. He did like a volleyball team too. And I think that kind of mindset is the way that you can keep up these sorts of things, because you don't feel obligated to schedule it and to make it happen.
These are very wise words, and I hope everyone follows that, and I'll get back to my guitar lessons.
Yeah.
Awesome. Actually, as you're talking about, I think, even though it's not like being the best at it, but you tried out a lot of instruments. You have this musical this music thing drawing you to try out a lot of things. And for you, music, I wonder, do you think it also overlaps with development? Do you see links in between to understand each of them?
There's totally a logic element to both, for sure. And I mean, there's been research done saying like kids who play music are better at math, and I think it's because of that. There's definitely a logic element. And there's what's kind of cool is there's actually some programming languages that are directly tied to music and based on music and stuff too. Which there's this one conference talk, and I'm forgetting the name of it, and so this is gonna bug me. But there's this one conference talk I saw once where this guy found this functional programming language where as you typed, it would start just playing the music. And so he could say like, oh, A sharp on like a 4/4 beat or something. And it would just start to play. And he kind of just played around with it. And then at the end of his talk, he just started typing. And as he was coding, just a song was forming, and he would delete certain things as he switched like into the chorus and then go back and stuff. And it was the coolest talk ever, because it really was just watching someone type in a functional programming language, but the output was music. And so he was able to live code and live produce music on the stage. And it was amazing. And I think there's a lot of potential there, because there's such a link between the two.
This is amazing. Do you remember the language itself, or was it very niche kind of
It was a very niche thing. You know, I will look it up and send it to you after we record, because I know I have it bookmarked somewhere. It was the coolest part.
We'll definitely add a link to that somewhere, because that sounds
I'm interested.
Yeah, it was so cool.
It's very uncommon to see when development and these super technical things, like you mentioned, usually it's about money. It's so often about money,
right?
No matter who you are. And then you actually start putting it into this very artistic direction that's like, that's very like almost philosophical of like, you can create music with this code. That's insane.
Yeah. I feel like the coolest things come out of people just playing with it and doing something. Another good example of this is one of my coworkers. Her name is Charlie Gerard, and she is just the most creative coder. And just recently she tweeted out saying, okay, I was playing with TensorFlow and machine learning, and I really like the game Beat Saber. And so I started training different models of my hands moving. She made a website so you could play Beat Saber on your webcam just with your hands. I played it yesterday. It's incredible. And she was just like, it's not performant. Please don't do like an audit of the performance, of the accessibility of any of the things. But it works. And then as you play it, you're just like, oh my gosh, it works. And those kinds of really cool things only come from people getting creative with it, and not doing it because like this could help the enterprise someday, but because they're just having a good time experimenting.
I also remember other things that happened to you more on the, I would call it the glamorous side of things. Mm-hmm. I called it Get Glamorous with Cassidy, where you actually featured in the Glamour magazine as one of the 35 women under 35 who are changing the tech industry. First, wow, congrats. That's awesome. And how does that feel? Like how is it to have this also recognition on another type of media?
Funky. And funky is the, it's a weird word to use it for, because it's an honor really. But it's such a different audience and such a different world. The Glamour magazine people, it felt like the movie Devil Wears Prada as I interacted with them and stuff. And which was fun, but it was just so different. When we did like the photo shoot for it, they were just like, oh, do you mind if we do the photo in your office? And I was just like, yeah, sure, I'll ask. And they're just like, yeah, that's fine. We all assumed it'd just be someone with like a DSLR taking a picture while I was at my desk, mm-hmm. and that'd be it. It was not. And so they come in and they actually got there before me, which was actually kind of worse because I didn't realize what was happening. They had a whole crew of like 10 people come to my office, and they took over a giant conference room in the middle of the office, and people were trying to work. They set up all of these big lights and everything, and they brought in fashion people. And again, it was like Devil Wears Prada. I remember there was, I'm not exaggerating, at least 30 to 50 pairs of shoes laid across of just all the different brands. And I remember the designer was looking at them, and like the intern was there with like a notebook and stuff. And the designer was like, where are the Jimmy Choos? And the intern was like, what? And she said, where are the Jimmy Choos? Get some now. And she sent the intern out to go buy Jimmy Choos shoes for the photo shoot. My feet aren't even in the pictures. Like they had me try on a bunch of different outfits, and they had like a hairstylist, they had a makeup person, they had all these different things. And they did it all in front of my coworkers, who were all kind of like tech nerds, and they're just kind of drinking their coffee, watching and poking fun. Like I remember my teammate being just like, while they were doing all this stuff. And I was like embarrassed, but also like, this is a big deal. Just roll with it. It was a very, like looking back, it was hilarious. At the time I was mortified. And it was a very good time, and I'm very honored to be a part of the list and be able to show that kind of stuff. But that was definitely an unforgettable experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are you scared of like going into the office now and it's just like, we're here with all the cameras, all the shoes?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, just the where are the Jimmy Choo's, that line and the panic on the intern's face as she ran off to get it. And we weren't close to any stores. She had to take a train to go get them. It was amazing. And then as they were doing makeup, they would be just like, okay, so skincare routine. And I was like, I wash my face. And like the makeup lady, she was just like, I've been doing strawberry jam on my forehead. It's something that I do recommend. And I was like, really? And she was just like, so you do strawberry jam and then chamomile tea under your eyes. Do it just a few nights a week. Works wonders. And I was just like, it sounds like a good snack. And just, I don't want to, if it works for you, great. It works for you. But it's just such a different world than what I'm used to.
Feels like it. Did you like the final pictures at the end? Did you feel glamorous?
Oh, I felt so glamorous. They actually didn't show me any of the pictures. Like I didn't see it until the magazine came out and there was one, and I was just like, hey, could I get that photo? And they gave me just one single 8x10 print of it, and that was it. And I was just like, I know you took so many and like 7 different outfits and all kinds of stuff. I will never see those photos. I've tried.
Oh no!
That's so sad.
And did you wear the Jimmy Choo's? I mean,
I wore the Jimmy Choo's, but they're not. I didn't take any pictures of my feet. It was. I mean, again, I don't mean to be negative about it. It was a great experience. It was hilarious. But yeah, that's the fashion biz, baby.
Hey there! It's Ad Spot time. We wanted to remind you that Untold Developer Stories is brought to you by Honeypot.io. Honeypot is Europe's tech-focused job platform. So if you're a developer or a data specialist, you can sign up and let companies apply to you with salary and tech stack upfront. They have a really nice and active, helpful team who just wants to help developers find jobs. So if you're looking for a new role, check them out at Honeypot.io. Now, let's get back to the show. What an event. Yeah. That's quite incredible. And I guess, yeah, it definitely clashes with what every day or even having PRs in a way different ways than that. On another part, I know that so you're musical, you're glamorous, you're crafty as well. We kind of understood that you have this awesome passion for keyboards and mechanical keyboards as well. Like these beauties here.
I love my keyboards.
How did it start?
It honestly just started with me wanting to have a cute desk. Mm. I was just like, I just want to make my desk look really, really fun. And so I started looking into what would a custom keyboard look like where I get to customize it and not have it just be one that I get at Target or something. And it just spiraled really, really far from there. I just totally went all in deep on mechanical keyboards. And I honestly credit one of my old coworkers where he had a custom keyboard at his desk, and I noticed that he had like 3D printed it and stuff. And I said, whoa, how did you do all of this? How could I get into this? And he just went in a full overview of how switches work, what parts I would need and stuff. And that's when I got like my first keyboard kit that I could build. And then from there, it just, I kind of just, again, went off and started making so many. And it's just a fun thing. It's like Legos, which I've got plenty of those too. It's like Legos, but it's functional and I get to use it. And it's something that I get to play with, and it's something that I built with my own hands. And so I started designing keycaps as well. And one keycap set that I designed was a Scrabble-themed keycap set. And I actually had to contact Hasbro and get like the license to be able to use the logo and everything. But then we were able to manufacture the Scrabble keyboards and get those sold. And that I was so proud of because it was cool. And we also had a kit of keycaps where you could get it where it was the number of keycaps in it was the same as a Scrabble set. And so you had like 8 A's in it and 2 blanks and everything.
Oh, that's so mean.
You could play Scrabble with keycaps. I was very, very proud of that. It was, you know, unusual, but a good time. And so I had a blast making that one. And then I also co-designed a set called Astrolokeys, which is like a very cute space-themed keycap set that also has like astrology things at the top for your function keys. And I co-designed that with a girl. She goes by Sailor Mercury on the internet. Her name's Amy. And we had such a great time making that one. And that one is still being sold. And then I also designed a set called DSS Tekla, where it's meant to be like a mix and match set too. And so I was kind of just having a ball making these. And I was just like, maybe I could get some free keycaps if I design them. And then it just kind of turned into a thing that I do now. And so I really love making keyboards for myself, but then also kind of making fun things that other people could try out too.
This is amazing. Okay, hard question. What's the favorite keyboard either you ever had or created yourself?
You know, that's very tough, but I do gotta say the one that I have right now, I'm pretty proud of. And I'm proud of it for a few different reasons, and I'll talk through it. So first of all, the keycap set is a combination of keycap sets where it was actually kind of hard to put together because just the num row alone, this num row I had to collect from multiple different grab bags of keycaps and different things because it was kind of a rare color to be manufactured, like this specific type of red. And so I had a great time doing that and collecting it and stuff. When I was in Seattle, I was on the board of a nonprofit that taught kids how to solder via mechanical keyboards. And so we organized a mechanical keyboard meetup and stuff. And so we would occasionally get like keycap donations and keycaps. We wanted it to not be specific to like num row and stuff that people get, but like fun icons and everything. And so I would be able to be just like, oh, this is the number I'm missing. And so getting this num row was a journey, but I got it done and I was very, very proud of it. And then the rest is a set called SA Oblivion and I got the monochrome version for it. And I just like the shape of the keycaps because they're very tall and like classic looking. And I'm going to get deep into it. So I'll try to keep it quick. The SA type of switches, it's a very specific height and shape where it's kind of curved and stuff. The molds that they use for these keycaps are actually the same molds that they used in like the 70s when they were using it for like space station keyboards and stuff like that. And so it's a very old classic look, which I really, really like. What's also fun is the HKJL. Those are Vim keycaps. And so they've got like arrows on it. So that way I can type in Vim pretty easily with it, which is fun. It's fully programmed and fully programmable. So the electronics underneath are like that. And I also have a silenced switches, and so they're particularly quiet and so people can't hear it when I'm in an office or on a call or something. And then the actual board itself, I got like the actual case and board itself I got in Korea, and my husband's Korean. We were visiting his family and I was just like, yes, this is a family trip, but there are certain keyboard parts that are manufactured only in Korea and not in the US. I need to get some keyboard parts. And this case is very hefty. It's I think 4 pounds. It's pretty heavy, a little less than 2 kilograms. And it's heavy and it's got like a really nice bottom where it doesn't slip and slide and stuff. And I just really like the shape and form factor. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking now. I love this keyboard and it is among my favorites.
It has a great history, definitely.
Yeah. It took me like 2 years to build it. And so it was definitely a labor of love. I didn't even get into the cable, but just now. that was a whole thing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
I wanted to show you my keyboard and get you to rate my keyboard. I'm at the office. I don't have my keyboard, but you know who does have their keyboard? The gap hazard.
Oh, that's you. So I don't know if mine is as fancy, but mine is like
but
these.
It's adorable. I love it. That's so fun.
And if you see, it actually has some Hangul.
I was going to say, I spy some Korean legends there.
And it has some cats. It has this one not having any clue why it's here, but it's like a resign. I'm not sure if people will be interested in that.
Is that one of those succulent keycaps?
Yes.
I love it.
And okay. What do you think? And how can I upgrade from your
10
master
out of 10.
Experience?
Oh, 10 out of 10. I think any keyboards that make people happy when they're using them, that's a 10 out of 10 keyboard. Because what's fun about them as you're typing on them with the keycaps that you like and the switches that you like and everything, there comes a moment where you're just like, oh my gosh, I built this. And you're just like, I'm having a good time typing on it. And that's what's the best part of these keyboards and stuff. And there are times where I swap out to a different one where it's much more loud and clacky. And I have a great time with those too. And I love your keyboard because it's very much something that you made. Like, no one has a keyboard exactly like that one. And I love that. And that's the coolest part of all of these keyboards, mm-hmm. for me, that you can completely customize them. And they're a high quality thing that will last you forever if you wanted to. And it looks good too.
Thank you. Oh, wow. I feel special now.
Good.
I mean, you mentioned earlier that you're also so quite fond of South Korea as well. And I heard you're also quite big on Korean drama.
Oh, I love K-dramas. Yeah, I admit I didn't know much about them until I got married to my husband who introduced them to me, but I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. They're so good. I love that. It's a very different kind of genre and culture and stuff, but it's a soap opera. I know that. I know that. I watched my grandma's telenovelas when I was growing up. And so, like, it's a glorified soap opera, but there's such an element of wholesomeness, at least in almost mm-hmm. all the ones that I've seen, where in a lot of westernized shows, they kind of go straight to like the raunchy scenes or the violence and stuff like that. And with the Korean dramas, there's a lot of implication without actually needing to show anything. And you kind of wait 10 episodes for the two main characters to just hug already. I don't even need you to do anything else. Just admit something. And they've perfected that. And where it just kind of melts your heart in such a good way. And so I always recommend the show like Crash Landing on You and Romance is a Bonus Book. They're wholesome. There's adventure to it. There's twists and everything. I love the genre. It's so fun.
It's so wholesome. I'm not like this. I wouldn't watch like all of them. I don't know all of them. But the thing is, like, as you said, there is so much intensity in the little things, like yeah. they won't kiss until the end of the season, but by accident, because no, this is not going to happen before that. And that makes it extremely unique in that way as well.
Yeah. And it's this build up to this moment. And you're just like, yeah, it just kind of melts your heart. And you're right. There's like intensity in the mundane where it'll be something small, like he bought her a candle. What does it mean? And you're just like, I know what it means. They're in love. But then like they get to that later and it's so fun. What's great is watching them with people who are just as into them as you are. And like my husband and I, when we watched this one called Itaewon Class, like we would be watching it and we would both go, oh, when it's just small things like him saying, I think I like you. And you're just like, it happened. And it's a blast to watch. And what's particularly fun is introducing those kinds of things to people. I have this one Discord group where there's such a variety of different people in there. It's mostly tech people, but it's such a variety of different people. And we've had everyone from like the Eastern Europeans to the Southerns in Mississippi and stuff starting to watch these shows. And they're like, these are amazing. this is great. And it's fun to be able to share that kind of stuff with people.
You shared some recommendations. Do you have additional ones that maybe the audience might be super interested in?
My top three, in no particular order, mm-hmm. are Crash Landing on You, Romance is a Bonus Book, and Itaewon Class. All of those have good twists, It's very wholesome. There's some element of surprise. Those ones are my favorite ones.
Ready to fall in love with some K-dramas here.
Yes, please. Let me know if you watch them for real.
You're going to be sitting there like, oh my God.
Just like live tweet it to me, even if it's just an email. Oh, I love seeing people react to it.
I'll definitely watch it.
In the pandemic, it's typically I really like dystopian style books and dramas and movies and stuff. And I can't really handle it as much anymore because the world kind of feels very dystopian. Yeah. And so having these very wholesome shows where it will be a happy ending, there's some love in there, there's humor. Mm-hmm. Those have been kind of getting me through. And yeah, I've rewatched some and then rewatched the regular comedies and stuff too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's nice to have that wholesome twist on things.
Life is hard. Sometimes you just need to be comforted by some nice K-drama and
simple
things where you're like, yes, I know.
Where they go to a bookstore together. But is it love? We don't know.
No, of course not. Maybe.
It is.
You would be an awesome narrator for K-drama, really.
Oh my God.
In the next episode.
Yeah. You don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be great.
I would watch that.
As you said as well, so yeah, like today, like we need some kind of soothing or just lighthearted as well, kind of thing to watch, to read, or to discuss together. What would you also, let's say, as a start of a conclusion before we get into our final part, what would you recommend for developers today, like with the current remote situation, to keep them going? Like, what would you recommend them to do or to go to work to?
One thing that I did a little bit in the pandemic, and it was truly just so great, was just having a regular meeting with friends where you just book it on your calendar, 1.5 hour where you just say hi. And sometimes those friends aren't ever people, they're internet friends that you might meet in the chat room. And sometimes they're your friends that you have in real life. But I did this with some friends and we called it stretch and share, where we would be on this call and we'd be just like, okay, we've been at our desks, and we would each go around and just say, what have you done today? And you would stretch during it. And so I would be just like, well, today I finally fixed that PR. And because I'm doing this stretch, everyone is doing this stretch. And then the next person would say, okay, we're going to stand up and we're going to do this. And so we're each just doing a little stretch to kind of get us moving and just telling a story about our day. And then sometimes that would kind of be it. It's almost like a stand-up, but it's with your friends. It gets you moving, and it kind of gives you that human connection. And I feel like especially things are opening up, and so it's great, and I'm glad to see that. But it's slowly but surely. But I don't see remote work going away anytime soon. And doing something like that with other people, whether it's in person or online, is a really good way to just kind of keep yourself feeling a little human.
That's a great advice. I would definitely try this out for sure.
Yeah.
We're unfortunately, we're slowly getting to the end of this very exciting episode. As a first part, I wanted to share, if you would like to follow Honeypot on Twitter, you can always check us out at honeypot.io. And yeah, what about you, Cassidy? Where can we reach out to you?
You can find me at Cassidoo, C-A-S-S-I-D-O-O, on most things. And I can kind of leave it at that. My name's Cassidy Williams. You can Google me. There's a Scooby-Doo character named Cassidy Williams. I am not the Scooby-Doo character. Oh. So if you Google the name, just look for someone who's not a cartoon, and that'll be my face. But yeah, Cassidy on most things. You can find me on Twitter, on Twitch, on GitHub, all of those.
Going to get all those sweet GitHub followers now.
Woohoo! Got some PRs to make.
Anna, do you have a closing final question?
Actually, yes. I did want to ask about your beloved habit tracking, habit supporting apps. I believe you mentioned you love those.
Yeah, and so I could get into these. So this is
a
good one to end
on. Top three.
Top three. So sure. So, first of all, their honorable mention is one that I made for myself, and it's called To-Do Meter. It's on my GitHub, which I just told you where that is. And all it is, it's a to-do app that I made for myself where it has a progress bar. And so as you check things off, it fills the progress bar. And so at the end of the day, you're like, ah, I did it. I filled the progress bar. I figured if I gamified that, that would help me, and it totally has. But then the one that I will definitely talk about is Obsidian. And I'm really, really deep in on Obsidian as a note-taking tool. And it's a local-first desktop app. And so you can get it on Windows, Mac, Linux, all of those things. And they have a mobile app that's in early access. I've played with it a little bit, but I haven't gone all in on that just yet. And it's just, at the beginning, it's just a glorified Markdown editor. It's local first, so it's on your local computer. You point it at a folder, and you can add Markdown files, update Markdown files. But it has a plugin system that is incredibly powerful. And so what's cool about it is you can add tags to your notes and backlinks to your notes. And with that, it generates a graph of all of the different notes that you've made. And it's an actual like graph that kind of looks like a brain over time as you make your notes, and it just shows the connections between them. It's so, so cool, because instead of like scrolling through your notes linearly, you can look at the graph and you could be just like, okay, I know I had this thing that I wrote down inside of my project ideas cluster. And then you can kind of zoom in on that and find your notes and stuff. And because you can make the connections between them, sometimes I'll for example, say, oh, I talked to the Honeypot folks today. And then later I'll talk about Honeypot. I can put some brackets around Honeypot, and now that's a link. And it's kind of like a wiki for yourself, because you start to be able to link to all the different things, where if I talk about something with my family or something like that, I can link different people's names, and then I can see all of my notes that are mentioning my sister and stuff like that. And so it gets really, really powerful. And I admit I'm not a power user of it. I just really like using it. But one of my coworkers, for example, he built a Telegram bot that pushes to his Obsidian vault. And so when he wants to save some kind of link for later, he'll send it to himself on Telegram, like on his phone. And then as he's working through his notes, he then makes a new note with that link and can just make notes on the article that he's reading. And then he'll also log his sleep and his mood. And now in Obsidian, because again, it has a whole plugin system, he can track how his mood changes based on his sleep. Another one of my coworkers, it has a daily notes plugin. And so it comes up with a note, and you can set your own template for it every day. He puts down his goals, things that he wants to do for the day, which meetings he has with which people. And then later when he's writing up, like, what did he do for the month? He can say, okay, here's the stuff that I did with Cassidy this month. Here's the stuff that I did with Jason this month, because it gathers all of it for him. And it's just a really cool way of making it line up to how you think. And I absolutely love tools that are flexible like that, where you can kind of twist and turn it and stuff. And I'll just do one more use case example. I know quite a few people who they run like Dungeons and Dragons campaigns and stuff like that, and do role-playing games and everything. And making a wiki of the campaign that you're authoring, I've seen so powerful, where they have just a graph for that. And they can be just like, okay, well, you click through this, and now it's going to show you the map of this. These are the different characters involved. Let's have the character sheet templates pre-populate with this. And it just works really well with each other. And again, it's like making a wiki for yourself based on these simple concepts of it just being a Markdown editor where you can link different notes together. It's really, really cool.
Yeah, it makes me think I'm missing something in my life, and this is Obsidian. And
it's free. And so it's really, really cool.
You are for sure sharing and promoting it very well. I'm convinced. I'll buy it. It's for free, but
download it.
Thank you so much, Cassidy, for all the great recommendations for work, not for work, for hobbies, for everyday. This was really, truly awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking with you both.
With awesome and great pleasure. Thank you very much again. And for everyone listening to us, we will see you in the next episode of Untold Developer Stories. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Untold Live Lover Stories. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider leaving us a review. They're really important for us. And if you're looking for awesome, high-quality dev videos, find us on YouTube at Onipod.io. Thank you for listening and happy coding.